morning. It is 8:30 on March 30th, and I'm calling the Senate Education Committee to order. This morning we have present Senator Begich and Senator Giesel and myself, Chair Hughes. Please remember your telephone etiquette, and thank you for those assisting us. Today we will have a hearing on SB 78, PFD Contribution Lottery, by Senator Click Bishop. With public testimony, and if it's the will of the committee, I hope to pass the bill out of committee. And then following that, we will also have a hearing on SB 96, the Education Transformation Act. And for that, we have invited testimony from some of the stakeholder groups. And at this point, I'll open up testimony on SB 78. And online, we have Paul Kendall. Paul, if you could introduce yourself for the record, and please give your testimony, and please keep it at 2 minutes. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you very much. Good morning. Well, this is a little late last night. I hope this makes sense. I was just checking the public testimony because we're very concerned. The term we're now using is a rogue government, so we're all trying to watch to see what's happening down there where we can't really participate. And I saw this, and I really haven't watched this presentation. I don't know whether you're... What caught my eye was the gambling term. Now, I've been going to Vegas for 20 years. The UNLV Special Collections Division down there was going to buy my studies 10 years ago. And in Vegas, they have tried desperately to get rid of the word gambling and replace it with gaming because gambling, there are legal definitions of participation. So I couldn't tell as I got to look at this. I don't know what Mr. Bishop had in mind, but my concern is, the first thing that comes to mind is you people are hell-bent, bound, and determined to protect that PERS and TERS program with $20 billion and $8 billion due. And I really think you've lost the mission, which is to make us a more free people. But in trying to assess whether I'm correct about that, I still should contribute a positive section. And here's what I'd like to suggest. Rather than sell some type of lottery tickets or dividend connection, if you're going to do a lottery, which is what it looks like in the brief I saw, I'd rather you gave away power. If you look at the power plant, I think we've got 220-megawatt units out there. And by giving away power, drawing, there's a lot of power that's excess that isn't used. And I think when I met with a former manager last time, I saw $500,000 that they put out to various community projects each year. By advertising like that, you teach people about electricity, which is the foundation of all of our economies and society, which is energy. You don't learn much by buying a ticket to talk about your PFD, which has now become a huge controversy, which we need to vote on. The other thing is Hawaii. In Hawaii, you lease land for at least 99 years, and it goes back to the school districts, and they use further forms of financing. So, not really knowing what this is about because we can't participate. I mean, it's so difficult for us. It's just we never know when we're going to be able to participate. I hope this has been a positive contribution. And in closing, I see a lot of stuff coming that's beyond most people's understanding, but it looks to me like if you took a loving mother with two children, put her down in front of that internet and paid her $18,000 a year, those two children, that mother will create a student that's more of a viable participant in our society than any school district teacher. And the reason is that when you look at the school districts, ladies and gentlemen, 90% of that money goes for their self-indulgence in wages and compensation. About 10% goes to the children. If you're lucky, when you divide your children out, it goes to about a small percentage for each one in a bundle. And I think they've used education as a means to further their own paradigm of monetary gain. And in closing, one more time, I'll get off of here. I apologize. It's awkward for me to talk to a wall like this. In my hometown, we had this discussion a long time ago about up close. We do not work to pay public employees to live a better life than us and endow or indenture our children so that they can go on and have a great life. It doesn't work. It's communism. It's always been a failure. It's caused revolutions and endangerment. So I think you need to come back and look at this school and exactly what are we doing here. And I think technology has been way past schools. Many of these teachers are now simply trying to use the child as a means of revenue stream or reoccurring revenue. And we get that. We're not that foolish. We understand what's happening. We just can't believe it is. And trying to get how in the world to resolve this without without a lot of pain.
Mr. Kendall?
Anyway, going back to my positive thing, is you should do something besides just a lottery ticket tapping. Gee, these people get more money than you ever dreamed of right now. So,
Mr. Kendall, thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it, and we appreciate, too, your patience waiting. At this time, I'd like to invite the sponsor up if he has any closing comments. And I will close testimony as he comes up. And this is an opportunity as well if members have any questions. So perhaps before final comments, do members have any questions? Senator Begich.
Senator Bishop, thank you, Madam Chair. The bill says it's a lottery fund, but it's not really a lottery. It's a raffle or it's a drawing. And even in the description inside when you're defining gambling, you know, you use the phrase permanent fund dividend drawing authorized under et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just, you know, just as a – it's a matter for me of concern because of the use of the word lottery and the impact of lotteries. You know, the Journal of Gambling Studies, there's an actual Journal of Gambling Studies, has numerous articles that describe the impact of addictive behaviors in gambling and lotteries. And your bill isn't that. It's a one-time – drawing. This is the Nanana Ice Classic writ big, you know, except for that we're not, you know, banking on when the ice is going out. What it's going to do is create a lot of backlash as it gets to the other body. And I suspect that there might be an easy solution to that, and that would be calling it what it is, which is the dividend drawing fund. Have you considered that? And is that something you might consider?
Through the chair, members of the committee, good morning. And thank you for the question. We've had those discussions, yes. But, you know, I'll just leave it at that. Pete, you have a comment?
Through the chair, members of the committee.
State your name for the record, please.
Oh, excuse me. My name is Pete Feldman. I'm staff to Senator Bishop, for the record. The name lottery, when we thought about the concept, we thought that lotteries get advertised a lot, you know, and they bring a lot of attention, and they, you know, people get excited about lotteries. People don't really get that excited about bucket raffles, you know, and so we kind of felt like in order to get the public's attention that, you know, calling it a permanent fund education lottery would generate some talk and some excitement, just because, you know, nationwide people are always talking about the Powerball and the lottery and so on. So that was our thinking. Changing it to a drawing, you know, in the title, I guess we could, depending on Senator Bishop's opinion, you know, we could take a look at that more seriously. If it meant getting this bucket raffle, you know, through and bringing it into law, it might be something to consider.
Follow up, Senator Begich.
Thank you for that thought, Peter, and thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, I had a negative reaction when I first saw the bill, and mm-hmm. Senator Bishop, you kept saying you're going to love this bill, you're going to love this bill, and. And I couldn't even bring myself to read it at first because I do react to lotteries which disproportionately impact the poor. They disproportionately impact minorities. But your description of the bill and my reading of the bill, this is not a lottery. It's a drawing. And I just, if I'm having that reaction and I'm taking the time to read the bill, it's not for me to speculate on the other body. It's not my job to do that. But I kind of know them a little. And a title change is a lot harder to get through. And I just, you know, this might be an easy way to help move a great idea to a good conclusion. Just my thought.
Senator Bigot, Click Bishop.
Thank you. Madam Chair, your comments are well taken, so thank you.
Other comments or questions? And I will just say, as I've passed Senator Bishop and Pete in the hall, I've referred to it as the raffle bill because I also have the same concern. And the difference, of course, is the contest is within a defined amount of time with a limited group of people, and this does meet that as a raffle. So, thank you for that. And if there are no – Senator Kiesel.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Bishop, I guess I'm going to tag on to the two previous speakers. I mean, the bill starts out defining gambling, mm-hmm. which immediately creates a negative context for me. And then as I read the op-ed that was published in the ADN on March 12, 2017, you know, you talk about many will opt for multiple chances. And second to the last paragraph, Alaska has a long history of involvement in games of chance and gambling. So I have concerns about the optics and actually the underlying issues that could arise from it. So that was all, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Geisel. Are there further comments? What is the will of the committee, Senator Coghill?
Madam Chair, I would like to move the bill, and I think the comments are important for the sponsor to take to heart. But at that, I move the committee substitute for Senate Bill number 78, the R version with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. And seeing no objection, the bill is moved from committee, and we'll take an at-ease to sign the bill. We're back on the record, and now we will have invited testimony, and we're going to start with Tim Parker, the president of NEA, if he would approach the table. Jeremy Holland with the Teamsters will be next, followed by Norm Wooten and then Lisa Parody. Good morning, Mr. Parker.
Good morning,
name
Senator
and Hughes. Affiliation for the record, proceed.
Yes, thank you. For the record, my name is Tim Parker. I am the president of NEA Alaska. It's a pleasure to testify here today. As a teacher for the past 18 years, I've got to watch a lot of these hearings, usually from back in Fairbanks, and being here representing our 13,000 educators from around the state is really an honor. The educators they represent are a mix of teachers and education support professionals. Those are the people who, of course, support the good work that goes on in schools but aren't necessarily certified as teachers, but they're critical to what we do. All of our educators are dedicated to schools. Most of them are career-long educators who are looking to do the most they can do to maximize student learning on any given day. And I can tell you from my heart that that's the passion that I bring and the passion that almost every teacher brings to schools is just how much student learning can we make happen. And your willingness here today to hear from us as the educators in Alaska is very much appreciated. So thank you for that. As an association, we applaud you, Senator Hughes, for bringing forth this bill. Starting the conversation about how to find efficiencies while still delivering a high-quality education in Alaska is admirable, and we appreciate that. However, we do need a long-term fiscal solution to Alaska's fiscal crisis, and class sizes have continued to rise over the last 5 years, and programs have been cut. While this issue isn't going to be solved in this particular bill, NEA Alaska does support a long-term fiscal solution, and that's our number one priority, because that's what we see as critical to helping to increase student learning. On this particular bill, educators do have a lot of thoughts, and there are a lot of different portions to this, but by far the one that attracts their attention the most is the virtual education piece. And thank you for digging into modernization and that concept. It's something that, as an association, we have a policy in favor of. We believe in digital learning. We think that it's good for kids. We think that when done right, it increases student learning, and that's what we like. We anything that increases student learning, that's what we're for. That's why we're there in schools, and that's what we want to see happen. In fact, as we talk right now, there's digital learning going on in many classrooms and in some of the ways that are described in this bill. Synchronous digital learning is one of the best options out there, and there are classrooms around the state right at this moment where students in a different location are receiving education from a teacher who's not physically in the same classroom as they are. And that's good, and it's happening, and we appreciate that. It comes down to a lot on digital learning as to whether there's good implementation or bad implementation, and that's it's something we care a lot about because we've seen both sides of it. And I think in talking to you, Senator Hughes, we discussed this bill is not about putting students in front of computers and just forgetting about them. There's no intent to go that direction, and we appreciate being able to be part of that discussion and trying to, you know, come to good solutions. We very much appreciate that inside this bill, under the legislative findings on Section 1, Number 5, saying, despite the benefits of virtual education has limitations and cannot replace high-quality teachers and teaching aids in the classroom who inspire high-quality student learning. We couldn't agree more. When I read that statement, I thought, that is exactly where you would find all of our members. They support digital learning, and they know the need to have actual teachers and student aides and paraeducators, as we call them, with the students at all times. So that's important. Let's see. So we do have some. Let me mention one other thing. So the Department of Education is moving forward with Alaska's Education Challenge. And they have one of their sections of committees they're going to work with is on modernization. And I do expect that this topic will become something that is part of their conversation. And we think that's a good thing, and we're ready and willing to engage in that conversation with them at the same time as this. We had some questions. So as we look through the virtual education part, we come up with questions. We wonder what resources the department's going to need in order to satisfy the needs in this particular bill. We think about the broadband issue a lot. That comes up very quickly with members as far as which districts have enough broadband in order to accomplish this as it's currently laid out. Obviously, rural districts are the ones that tend to not have enough. But we'd like to know which ones actually do have enough to satisfy this one. We'd like a little bit more, we wonder how much of a role educators will play in developing and vetting some of this content in there. Obviously, we, as people who've spent their careers doing this type of work, we would love to be part of that. Including us in that conversation, I think, would be helpful. We have experts around the state, like I said, who are doing this work right now. And I can give you dozens of names of educators who are very good at this and can make sure that it results in student learning. We do wonder a little bit also about the usage fees and whether they'll be able to cover all the expenses that districts might incur going down this line. It's complicated to get to a spot where you can really make this happen and have student learning be maximized. And I know that's the intent of this bill, so we want to be part of that. Other topics mentioned in this bill that come up, the Praxis. We do appreciate that the mention of Praxis and the idea that making sure our scores are high enough. We think that high standards are critical to teachers. We that's what we want to see. We want to see the highest standards we can possibly have. There's part of us though looks at it and thinks that are these right for Alaska and should we get the standards that are for Alaska? Because I know the bill suggests tying it to other states and where their standards are. And although we should take a look at whether their states are, I think we have to figure out what's right for Alaska. But the nod towards higher standards, always appreciated. The Praxis is a legitimate way of demonstrating content knowledge, which is about half of what student what half of teaching is. Teaching really falls into content knowledge, and then the ability and the art to actually do the teaching. And you need both to make that happen. And the praxis is a legitimate way to make sure content knowledge is honored. On the section on group health, sections, I think it's mentioned in section 7 and 8, we do struggle with the idea of insurance pooling, because in the past it hasn't resulted in savings. We know that there's a state study out there that is due back in June that's going to address some of these issues, and we really don't want to see the quality of health care diminished. We want to talk about things, but in the end, it's not about diminishing. On section 8, we had a little bit of a quandary with what appears to be outsourcing, I guess, to put it in a simple term. As we're trying to encourage cooperative arrangements, it would appear that we're incentivizing districts to take education services and move them into the private sector. And we think student health and safety starts to come into issue when we move services there. The people who work in schools, I think, are best equipped when they're actually employees of the schools, and they're if they turn over very quickly, and if they aren't properly screened and vetted, I think there are safety issues that start to come up, and that starts to concern us. I'm not going to talk too much in detail on sections 10 and 11. There was a lot of testimony on that on Tuesday night. We share many of the concerns, and there's some unintended consequences on some of those pieces, I think, that were being shared by others. But our number one concern is student learning. That's what we think about. That's what we stay focused on. That's what your teachers and education support professionals are dedicated to. So with that, I thank you for allowing us to testify here, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Parker. Are there any questions? Senator Begich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tim, on Section 8, let me be blunt. That's the section I helped the senator with, and you say, is there, your question is that potentially outsourcing? Mm-hmm. Could you explain to me just in more detail where you see how that could be, where you see the outsourcing of educational services there? And that's on page 4, I guess, in my version, which is the work draft T, lines 23 to 29.
Correct, through the chair to Senator Begich. It's the mention of the word businesses, cooperative arrangements with businesses. It would appear that you would get an incentive of, but I think it currently it's funded at $100,000, but it's not actually in the budget. But this would raise it to $200,000 in order to outsource economical administration or educational services. And I know there's a definition in statute of educational services, and it concerns us because of that turnover issue. And the quality of the employees. The first person to see the student on a daily basis is, in most places, the bus driver. And they're the ones that often will see whether that student's going to have a good day or a bad day. And sometimes that bus driver, if they're not the highest quality employee, won't notice that or won't alert the front office or the counselor to issues. And then the next person you see is usually the custodian or the food service person as you're going into the thing. So it's really not until the student has been at school or, you know, away from their home for more than an hour or two that they actually see their first teacher. And so the employees that do interact with students outside of the classroom, it's important that they are actually employees of the districts and that they that they're held to high standards. And the people we have that are doing that, that are our members right now, they want to work at the highest standards and they want to be the best employees they can, and so we think they should stay as employees of the districts.
Follow up? Mm-hmm. Okay. Seeing no other questions, thank you very much, Mr. Parker. And next, Jeremy Holland with the Teamsters. And Jeremy is online. If you'd introduce yourself and state your affiliation, proceed with your testimony, please, Jeremy.
Hello, Madam Chair and members of the Senate Education Committee. My name is Jeremy Holland. I'm a business representative with Teamsters Local 959. I'm also the Teamsters Director of Student Transportation. I assist with the school bus contracts in Anchorage, Wasilla, Kenai, Healy, and in Fairbanks. I'm also a father of two children that ride the buses here in Fairbanks. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. I would like to address a couple of concerns Teamsters Local 959 has with SB 96. Only requiring one state inspection a year, removing the double minimum wage for school bus drivers. The first item I'd like to address is found in section 6B2, page 3. Only requiring one state inspection a year will increase the risk of students, bus drivers, and public, and will potentially increase the amount of late buses due to breakdowns. The Department of Transportation, DOT, cannot inspect buses when the buses are transporting students or if the bus is working a fire charter. You can find the DOT restrictions in 49 CFR 390.3 F1 and AS 19.10.399 D13. That said, DOT can get involved under the following criteria found in 49 CFR 390.5 definitions. If there's an accident involving a fatality, bodily injury, one or more motor vehicles incurring disabling damage. Because of these limitations placed on the DOT, the only outside inspections the school buses receive are the two state inspections a year, which are also scheduled up to a year in advance. The two inspections a year are all the children that ride in them 9 months out of the year, the employees that operate them, and the public that are on the roads with them have to protect them. Currently, the two state inspections are scheduled almost a year in advance, giving the employers the opportunity to defer maintenance until just before the scheduled inspection. Line charts, which you guys should have a copy of, provided by the Department of Education and Early Development, show each of the districts' percentage of buses passing inspection from the year 2004 to present. The charts reflect the changes from inspection to inspection, sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. Why should we take a chance and wait a full year to find out if the buses are being maintained at the highest level possible? The second item I would like to address is found in section 23 on page 14. Removing the two times the minimum wage for school bus drivers could increase the amount of driver shortages we currently face in the state of Alaska. In August 2015, the starting bus driver wage was $15.50 an hour. The Fairbanks Daily News Miner reported a shortage of 30 drivers. In March 2016, the starting wage for bus drivers is $19.50, and the Fairbanks Daily News Miner reported a shortage of 16 drivers in Fairbanks. While I was researching and looking up these newspaper articles, I noticed there's a trend. School bus driver shortages across the country. There are many reasons for driver shortages, but here are a few, and I'm using Alaskan information and averages. Current pay for bus drivers for the double minimum wage is $19.50. The average bus driver gets 6 hours a day at 183 days a year, roughly. That's $21,411 a year that a bus driver makes. Again, the hours worked is about 6 hours a day. There's split shifts. Average is 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours in the afternoon, with about 4 hours of unpaid time in between. So these employees are working roughly a 10-hour day to get paid for six. The DOT regulations prohibit most of the drivers the opportunity to get a second job. Drivers are required 10 hours of downtime between the end of their shift and the start of their next working day. Drivers are also limited to 70 hours total for a work week, behind the wheel or not, and then they have to have a mandatory rest. This makes it extremely difficult for bus drivers to work a second job and remain DOT compliant. Drivers can carry up to 84 very precious pieces of cargo, and because of this, they have to pass a background check. They have to pass a CDL permit test, a road test, and be able to work a very flexible schedule. The stresses placed on these bus drivers are safely driving a very large vehicle, while watching out for road hazards, while watching up to 84 kids, and making sure they're acting in a safe manner, and making sure they don't miss a bus stop, and get them to and from school on time. Again, our concerns are only requiring one state bus inspection a year could put the kids, employees, and public at risk, And removing the double minimum wage for school bus drivers could create a larger school bus shortage for the state of Alaska. I ask you to not remove the double minimum wage for school bus drivers, nor decrease the number of mandatory bus inspections. To do so will create a bigger shortage of bus drivers and an unsafe environment for our most precious cargo, your kids and grandkids, as well as the motoring public on our road systems. I ask that more time and discussion is spent regarding this bill before it moves forward. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the Senate Education Committee for allowing me to speak today.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. Are there questions for Jeremy this morning? Seeing none, we will next move to Mr. Wooten. Norm Wooten, would you please come to the table? And you know the routine.
Thank you, Chair Hughes, members of the Senate Education Committee, for this opportunity to testify about on SB 96 this morning. My name is Norm Wooten, for the record. I'm the Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. In the interest of time, I won't go through each individual section of the bill, but I'll just touch on the salient points that that we think are important. On Tuesday evening, during your public hearing, many superintendents, business managers, and school board members did an admirable job of covering the elements of the bill, and so I won't belabor the point by going through each one of those. Section 4, this section expands the content areas in which students may challenge out of courses related to physical education, art, and music. We heartily support this, as seat time is never an appropriate gauge, but rather mastery of content should be the standard. I might suggest, though, that you add CTE, career technical education courses, to the areas, just to give students more opportunities to take other courses that they might like and challenge out. I know in my hometown of Kodiak, many students take welding, for instance, from Kodiak College, from the university system, and why shouldn't they be able to test out once they've received a state certificate, or rather a national certificate for different welding things? And so that's just one example, and so I would suggest that you might want to take a look at that. Section 5, I suspect you're looking for accountability from school districts. And we certainly support accountability. However, this seems redundant, as districts already report on this data in other places. We just believe that this is yet one more requirement for one more report to be submitted by districts. And although it may seem to be a small requirement, districts are already struggling to comply with many state and federal reporting requirements. So we just suggest that you look at this and consider that small thing. Section 6, we appreciate the easing of requirements in any way possible, and one school bus inspection per year seems to be reasonable to us. Section 7, we support the idea of districts being free to share space in school facilities. However, we believe also that it should always be voluntary and allow districts to make the choice for what's most appropriate in their individual communities. Sharing space with businesses might take a little more thought, but as long as it's voluntary and up to the districts, it could be a good option for districts. I don't dare speak for every community in the state, and it should be left up to each of those communities in the state. Section 8, the opportunity to obtain this one-time grant where districts could show cost savings is, I think, very, very wise on your part. If school districts, for instance, choose to share their facilities with other entities throughout the state, there's probably going to be some building modifications that need to be made to protect the safety of students. Things like separate entrances, block off the rest of the school. I don't know what all they are, but certainly there would be some facility requirements to do that. And so thank you for thinking about that. Section 9, among the items in this section, it refers to districts joining the state of Alaska health plan. The number one cost driver, as you've heard many times from school districts, folks, school board members, superintendents, folks, school districts, the number one driver for cost in districts is health insurance. And it just continues to rise, and it's particularly difficult in Alaska. We have the highest rates in the nation, and we don't see any end in sight of those costs continuing to increase. There are many questions that need to be answered on how this could occur with health insurance benefits always contained in collective bargaining agreements across the state. However, this is not the reason. This is not a reason that we shouldn't examine this and make provisions and changing statute to allow participation in those state health insurance plans is step one. And so I encourage you to seriously consider this because something is hard is not a reason not to do it or not to take it on. Section 10, this is the most troubling to school districts, as you heard in the testimony on Tuesday evening, of any section in the bill. This, in effect, opens up the foundation formula by adding a building capacity element to the formula. Student populations fluctuate year to year, so it's certainly not static. This provision, as it's written, would be devastating to many school districts in Alaska, and there's great concern from my members about this. We believe that changes to the foundation formula deserve to be carefully considered and vetted for any unintended consequences that may occur. And the last time that we opened up the foundation formula and looked at it, it was done over about a year and a half period, and it had a lot of time for consideration from districts and so forth. And I believe that we came up, from my experience in looking at school funding formulas across the nation, we came up with probably one of the best foundation formulas of any state in the nation. So I would just ask you to slow down on this particular vision, this particular section. Take a look at it. Take some time to give it proper vetting. Sections 15 and 23 provisions concerning the PTPC, the Professional Teaching and Practices Commission, are in alignment with the legislative audit recommendations, and we certainly support those and think that would be a proper thing, an appropriate thing to do. In Article 15, AASB supports the use and expansion of distance delivery material. And we thank the committee for and the sponsor for introducing this bill and considering it. Many districts are already providing or purchasing these services for delivery both inner and intra-district throughout the state. Costs for courses should always be market-driven. There shouldn't be a formula stipulating what the costs are, and so we appreciate this change in the committee substitute of the bill. Membership in the consortium obviously should be always voluntary. We appreciate that. Districts should be allowed to determine the benefit for their students. And we believe, and we know that you understand, that virtual education is not the silver bullet. But it is another tool in the toolbox of districts being able to deliver education to students, particularly in rural or isolated district areas of our state. And so we appreciate that. However, this doesn't relieve us of the responsibility to continue to pursue greater access to broadband for all districts across our great state. Dr. Bob Wicker of the Association of Alaska School Boards has testified and given you, I think, a lot of information about that, and we want to continue working with you on this. It's not an item that can be solved in 1 year or probably even 10 years, but we need to continue working toward that as we strive to serve all students in the state. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today. I won't take up any more of your time, but I'd certainly be available for any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Wooten. Are there questions? Senator Begich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Wooten, in the testimony from the NEA representative, they drew their attention to Section 8, number 4, and the language that I helped develop a little bit here. And their suggestion, I think what Tim was suggesting, Tim Park was suggesting, was the elimination of the word business in there. Is that something that would give you particular heartburn or your members particular heartburn if that were removed from this?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, we have no opposition to removing it. We would ask that it, just to make sure that it's voluntary and allow districts to do that. I did not take the, I did not understand it that it might be concerned with outsourcing. I had never even considered that that idea that because business was in there.
Just to follow up, Madam Chair.
Senator Begich.
I hadn't considered that either, so I have that on the, that's bubbling in my head, and I just be curious to get maybe a comment from you, a more official comment at some point for the record, if that's all right.
Yes, again, through the chair. Senator Begich, we'd have no opposition to that.
Thank you.
Okay, seeing no other questions, thank you very much, Mr. Wooten, and we'll go to Dr. Lisa Parody, who is online. Good morning, Dr. Parody.
Good morning.
Proceed.
Can you hear me okay?
Try again. It's a little broken up. If you're on speakerphone, please get pick up the handset.
Okay. I am on the North Slope, so it may be challenging, but let me know as I proceed. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dr. Lisa Skiles-Parody, the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators. The Alaska Council of School Administrators is the umbrella organization for the Alaska Superintendents Association, the Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals, the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals, and the Alaska School Business Officials. You heard from many of our members during public testimony on the bill, and I think they did an incredible job of sharing their stories from their districts. I will try not to be repetitive. I first want to thank Chairman Hughes and the members of the Senate Education Committee for your important work on this bill and on the many challenges facing education across Alaska today, especially in this budget climate. We appreciate the opportunity to work with you. In speaking with Senator Hughes, she shared that she wanted to get the ideas out and get the conversation started. And I think we can all agree that that goal has been accomplished. The bill contains significant and useful concepts in sections 2, 3, 4, 6, 12. These include the changes in bus inspections, the increase in retention of unreserved fund balance, although I note I don't know any districts that can use this tool currently, but as Senator Hughes' staff shared, optimistically this could be a future tool. We support allowing districts to approve credit for physical education, music, and art taken outside the school hours in our grades 9 through 12. And we join our colleagues of AASB in maybe suggesting that you consider expanding this provision to include career technical education or CTE. In Section 7, we support the idea of districts sharing school facilities. And I'll also note that this is happening in many cases now. However, we do think that the language should be amended to read that the may recommend rather than require. It should always be voluntary and allow districts to make the choice for what is appropriate in their communities. We do also appreciate the provisions regarding the cooperative arrangement grant program. I'll note for you that in recent years I've had districts and we've worked with Department of Education to look at that statutory provision because they wanted to avail themselves of it to support collaboration and efficiency. And it was not funded, so therefore it was not available. So we do appreciate that you are moving that forward. And we also support the adjustments to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission in alignment with the most recent legislative budget and audit recommendations. Section 9, I think most importantly, our members appreciate the recognition of the need to address the rising tide of health care costs that are a significant cost driver to all school district budgets that cannot be contained within the district's budgeting process. Any support to lower these costs would be appreciated. This concept was discussed, as you know, a couple of years back, and the bigger the pool, the more bargaining power a group has for negotiating insurance and for weathering high claims. The realities, however, of over 50 negotiated bargaining agreements will make this problematic, and a time frame would need to be considered for current negotiated agreements to be rolled into a larger group. The first step is changing the statute to allow this to happen, and then I think we need time for the remaining details to be addressed. But unequivocally, measures to support districts to lower or contain healthcare costs need to be considered, and we appreciate your efforts in that vein. We continue to have reservations, though, with regard to some other key provisions of this bill. And we believe these would be best addressed by working through them in the interim, in tandem, perhaps, with Commissioner Kalkins and the State Board of Education's education challenge process. It's more important to get this comprehensive work done well than to push it through in a bill that has been before the committee and the public in just a short time when we're two-thirds of the way through the session. So I'm going to hit on a couple of those concerns. Section 5, join our college at ASB. It adds a requirement back to the annual report school districts have to make to the department to include categories of administrative employees and the ratio of employees in each category compared to the number of students in the district. This is a return to the recently repealed bureaucratic reporting requirements of 70-30. I think they were repealed last year. So the information is already reported in OASIS and in financial audits and publicly available on the DEED website. So without context on how this will help inform the public of anything, you know, is it meaningful? This is an unfunded mandate without any basis for the specific ratios required. I'm compelled to note that administration is a legitimate cost of operating a large system. And note the legislature itself has substantial administrative costs. So we would not support that provision. I want to look at the fiscal note briefly, pages 11 through 13, where the delayed but full impact of the bill can be seen. Overall, the cuts to school districts are roughly $21 million in FY18, $36.8 million in FY19, and $52.7 million by FY20, culminating in a sustained loss to districts of over $68 million in FY2021 and every year thereafter. The losses appear to occur in only 20 of the 54 districts, meaning there are clear winners, you know, if no cuts is a win, and losers. So, for example, Anchorage will lose roughly $1.7 million in FY18, $6.6 million in FY19, $11.6 million in FY20, and $16.5 million in FY2021. Another example is Sitka, loses $220,000 in FY18, $990,000 in FY19, $1.7 million in FY20, $2.5 million in FY21. So as indicated above, as I just shared, those cuts total $68 million, and they're phased in over 4 years due to the hold harmless provision currently found in the foundation formula. The cuts would come about if a district did not consolidate schools operating below 80% capacity and located within 25 miles by road to another school, as indicated in Section 11 of the proposed bill. I have inquired with the department about how they are looking at the 25 mile by road to another school, and today have not been able to get a list of what that would look like. I just feel like there's a lot of details about why those indicators and what those details specifically are that are missing. This is a substantial change to the well-established school finance methodology and was just introduced without input from stakeholders and without a clear understanding of the underlying mechanisms. So the provision will have profound impacts to many school districts in Alaska. And it's our feeling that changes to the foundation formula must be carefully considered and vetted for any unintended consequences. I know Section 11 intends to drive districts to use schools at greater capacity, and we agree that this is a worthy goal, but it falls short when one dives into the details. I'm calling, as I said earlier, from the North Slope, so I want to use an example from here to illustrate my point. In the North Slope Rural School District, several schools are specifically built with modules interconnected by hallways so that the hallways could be cut with heavy equipment if there's a fire. And some of you might recall that's exactly what happened several years ago in a fire at the old Top of the World Hotel. The square footage of these hallways distorts the occupancy rate, as does the storage space that's required in facilities where barge supplies on the barge comes once a year when it comes in for the full year over the summer. I also note that the reduction in funding would start next fiscal year, FY18, which begins on July 1st, 2017, which is really 4 months from next weekend. And could any of your communities reasonably address school closures and their full impact in such a compressed time frame? No is the short answer. The arbitrary application of the 80% occupancy rate and the 25-mile criteria in a short time is one-size-fits-all cookie-cutter approach that we would decry if the federal government were imposing it on Alaska. We can do better, I think, by working together and focusing on more than just the mechanics, you know, on the funding formula. There's some other problems that I think you heard with the proposed occupancy rate. What is included and what is not? You know, is an Arctic indoor playground space included? Is the community connection space? How about variable term programs such as NACTEC? Required one-on-one paraprofessionals for SPED, preschool students in the school, administrative space. The plain truth is that decisions about space are probably best left to the local boards and administrators. But to move forward with this concept, let's work together and take some more time and figure out what might really work. And I'll close by talking about the Virtual Education Consortium. We appreciate that the committee has spent a lot of time learning about broadband, bandwidth, and what reform of education taking advantage of distance education tools can look like, and how best to maximize student learning, especially in rural areas. And we just want to say thank you. Thank you for taking the time to invite experts in to talk about these issues. And you learned that there are many great things happening across Alaska in virtual education today. We believe in digital learning, and there's no doubt that virtual education needs to be expanded and supported. However, this bill forces districts to pay to join the consortium, potentially change their classroom schedules, their district calendars, and their in-service days, in addition to providing professional development for all teachers, regardless of whether or not virtual education works in their content area. To sort out ways to make the most of virtual education, again, can best be accomplished to take more time to work out the details and possibly work in tandem with the Education Challenge looking at this area being led by the Department of Education. We do have to continue to pursue greater access to broadband for all districts. And, again, appreciate your recognition of that and know that there are efforts in the works to bring some support to those areas. But these two have to be done in tandem, increase bandwidth and broadband at the same time that we expand virtual education. And we want to work with you on this concept and appreciate your efforts to dig into it. So it's time to close. I want to thank you again for your work on behalf of education and for your public service. You have opened the door to new thinking. We need to take the time to think these things fully through and vet it and vet them for any unintended consequences. I'll provide further and more detailed written testimony in the form of an action alert that I forwarded to my members and will submit that to you for your consideration. I thank you very much for your time and the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Dr. Parody. Are there any questions? Senator Begich.
Dr. Parody, I'll ask the same question to you that I asked Norm Wooten in the testimony earlier. NEA mentioned concern about the outsourcing in the section I helped work on, Section 8 on page 4. Do you have any objections to removing the word business from there?
To removing the word business? You cut out a little bit. I'm sorry, Senator, through the chair, Senator Begich. to removing the word schism?
Yes, Dr. Parody, that's what I... Yes, that's what I said.
I would like to, through the chair, Senator Begich, I'd like to send you a written response. My sense is that removing the word business would be acceptable. I do not think we'd have an objection to that. But I'd like to follow up with you in writing.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Parody.
Thank you very much. It was good to hear from all of you, and my door remains open to you as we're working on this, and I invite your input as we move forward. And with that, we are ready to tie things up. So our next meeting will be tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., and we will continue on SB 96. Commissioner Michael Johnson will be here from the department. So I look forward to that, and seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn at 9:26.